email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Connor Pope joins us in studio. Connor, cottage pie, beef, shepherd's pie, lamb.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, look.
Mind you, I always make shepherd's pie with beef, and in my own home, I would call it shepherd's pie because I don't like lamb.
Yeah.
And I would never cook with lamb, or I try not to cook with lamb. So I call a beef pie shepherd's pie, even though I know in my heart and soul it's cottage pie.
It's the reference, isn't it? The shepherd and the sheep.
Exactly. Mind you, I don't know what the beef have to do with a cottage. Do the cows live in the cottage? Or
I have no idea.
Does the farmer live in the cottage? Who knows? But anyway.
Anyway, good to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. How many more days do we have of that?
Oh, look, well, you see, there's people who were, you know, had holidays and they only arrived.
I actually kind of was resentful of all those people because I heard the opening of the show and you were like, oh, it's great. Everyone's back to normal, back to life, back to reality. And I was like, I was working on the 26th, the 27th, the 28th and the 29th of December.
Right. Okay. Well, I was in the middle there somewhere. So we won't upset anybody and we'll just move on.
I'm already upset.
Yes, yeah. This will upset people because the property tax is due when?
Well, it's actually due. It depends on how you pay it. Because if you pay it in a lump sum, it's due later this week. So I think the 10th of January is the time you have to pay it. But a lot of people can pay through alternate means. Because to be fair to revenue, when they set up the local property tax, which, by the way, is really important. And it was one of those hangovers from the property crash because we were so utterly reliant on property, on the money that was coming in from sales of properties that it really hampered the economy to a great degree. So they introduced the property tax.
Stamp duty. I was trying to think of
it. Stamp duty was the word, yeah. So they introduced the local property tax. Anybody who owns a property is liable to pay it. You can pay it in a multiple of different ways. You can pay it once a month by a direct debit, which is how I choose to pay it, which means it's relatively painless. You can pay it quarterly, or you can pay it either by direct debit or cash in a lump sum. Right. It depends on how you do it. There's different cut-off points.
Can you save money by doing it any which way?
No. That's one of the good things about it, because a lot of businesses, a lot of companies charge you more if you opt to pay by direct debit, or famously, and I think one of the things that we've talked about on the show before is motor tax. So that if you pay your motor tax once a year, it might cost you, let's say, €400. And then if you pay your motor tax in four quarters, so pay it every 3 months, it might cost you €450 or whatever. So you're penalised.
Not
the case with property tax. Right. And that's to the revenue's credit. So, you know, a lot of people, it's probably worth bearing in mind that if people have had set up a payment method in 2023 or 2022 and they were with Ulster Bank or with KBC, those banks are now gone.
That's important.
So you want to make sure that your payment methods are up to date, and you can do that through the revenue website. Okay. So there is a portal for it.
And does it keep going until you say stop?
Yeah, and the valuations of the properties are based on the valuations that were made, I think, in 2021, and that will be the valuation of the properties until, I think, 2025. So it's not like it's this constantly changing thing that has to be updated regularly. It does have to be paid, and it is an important element of the
account. So if you are monthly or quarterly, you don't do anything.
If you're paying direct debit every month, it keeps rolling over.
Yeah. But if you decide to pay by lump sum, your time is nigh.
Yeah, and it's a tricky time to pay. Because a lot of people, you know, they don't have that much cash in January. But, you know, I think there's a degree of flexibility that's shown there by revenue.
The other thing is a big story by you in the paper today, but it begs the question about scams and traditional banks versus fintech banks.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, the scams are pernicious and they impact everybody. So they impact people with credit union accounts, they impact people with accounts in pillar banks, and they impact people with the fintechs. I think one of the things that makes a fintech like Revolut different from the other from others is that there's two things that I think make it different. One is it can be very difficult to speak to a human being if you have a problem with a Revolut account. And I've spoken to many people, I think we've probably talked about them on the show in the past, people who have had their money, who have lost money in a scam with Revolut accounts, and they just find it absolutely impossible to talk to a human being.
Do they have an office in Ireland?
They don't have it. They were going to be headquartered here after Brexit, but I think they opted not to. So they have a presence here and they have people employed here. But the difficulty is that they rely very heavily on chatbots, and they rely very heavily on email. And I've spoken to them about that, and I've challenged them about it, because I think sometimes if you're in the middle of a scam, and this is the scam isn't being perpetrated by the fintech. Yes, and that's very important to say that. Yeah. But if you know that the money is leaving your account, and if you have become aware of that, what you need is you need to speak to a human being who can tell you what steps you need to take, if any, to try and retrieve your money. And I think a lot of the fintech companies have poured all of their money into the technology and the algorithms, and they say, okay, well, that's enough. We do not have to have people at the end of the phone who can talk you through a crisis. And I think pillar banks still have those people at the ends of the phone to talk you through a crisis. That's not to say that they're immune to the scams, and they're not. And also, I think sometimes one of the real unique selling points of a company like Revolut is the instantaneous nature of the financial transactions. So if I want to send you money, I pick up my phone, I key in your number, I select a sum of money, and I send it to your Revolut account. And that really appeals to me, because I'm forever giving out about how slow pillar banks are moving money from A to B, because it's all computerized. But that the fact that Revolut is instant can be a real disadvantage when there's a scam happening, because once the money is gone from your account in Revolut, it's gone. Whereas sometimes with a bank like AIB or Bank of Ireland or PTSB, there's a greater possibility that if you detect the scam very quickly, that the bank can stop the transaction happening because their processes aren't quite as instantaneous.
And people who scam, they do it sort of in increasing amounts of money, don't they? So it's like they're testing the waters.
Exactly.
So they'll take enough, and nobody said stop, I'll take a little bit more the next time. Nobody said stop, I'll take a little bit more.
And you can see like hundreds of, and in fact thousands of euros can be drained from somebody's account, because they might start with, oh, I'll take 50 euros, then I'll go up to 500, and then I'll go to 1,000 and 2,500 and whatever it might be. And you kind of wish that all, because, and I think Revolut will make the point that this isn't their problem. And it's not fair to a company like Revolut or to any bank to expect them to solve the problem on their own. And they're 100% right in that respect.
So who needs to solve it then?
Everybody. Because, because it's the telecoms companies that allow these text messages to come through on their platforms. It's the banks that allow the money to go from A to B without any kind of person or computer going, hang on a second, does Ray Darcy really want to send 5,000 euros to a travel agent in Cambodia or whatever it might be? And it's dependent, the government has to play a role. And I think...
When you see what algorithms are capable of doing to sell us stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So for example, I get, boots, whatever, walking boots or whatever.
Of course they're walking boots, right?
I don't actually. I'm just giving that as an example.
Of course, yeah.
So what I'm saying is that they can plot your behaviour if they want to sell you something.
Yeah.
Similarly, they should be able to plot your behaviour when it comes to withdrawing from your account and spot something that's out of the ordinary.
And I suspect they can do that to a degree. And I suspect an awful lot of the technology that companies have put in place protects their customers. But I think more needs to be done. And I think we need to be in a position where we move beyond simply blaming the consumer or blaming the victim for the scam, because all the time when I highlight these stories here and elsewhere, what I'm told by the banks is, oh, well, the transaction was authorized by the user, by the victim. But that person has been the victim of a very elaborate scam. And it's not good enough to say, well, you gave away your money, so it's nothing we can do.
No, not good enough.
There needs to be like a multi-pronged approach, in the same way that years ago, you'll remember this, and a lot of your older listeners might remember this, that when email was absolutely cursed with spam messages, and you were forever getting spam messages into your main email box. I can't remember
how
last
did
time.
They solve that.
They put in filters, and they just put in better measures of security. So it should be possible that the telecoms companies work in conjunction with the state, and work in conjunction with the regulator, and work in conjunction with the banks and the fintechs to protect consumers and to do more. And if they don't, I think they should be made to pay a price, because it's only when things cost businesses money that they act proactively to stop them happening.
Great. Now, we have enough time for this. We do. This came in to pricewatch@rte.ie. I purchased 7 tickets as a Christmas gift for a family outing to take place in April of this year, 2024. Unfortunately, 4 of those people can't make it due to a wedding abroad on that date, which I was unaware of when I bought the tickets. I requested a refund or a credit note, but they flatly refused, quoting terms and conditions. Is this unreasonable due to giving 4 months' notice? Thank you.
Well, the reason why I thought it would be useful to talk about this problem is because yes, is the short answer. It is kind of unreasonable, but it's not unreasonable on behalf of the theatre company. It's unreasonable on behalf of our listener, because them's the rules.
So they bought tickets for a theatre.
They bought 7 tickets for an event. that's happening in April, and four of the people can't go to the event because they're going to be away. Now, the person who contacted us believes that the theatre company should take responsibility for that and should give them the money back. Mm. And the argument goes, well, listen, you've got 4 months more to sell the tickets, yeah, so you'll be
good
able
argument,
to sell the tickets,
argument, yeah.
So why don't you just give me my money back? But the theatre company could make the point that, well, we sold you these tickets in good faith. It's not our fault that four members of the party can't go because they've got a wedding overseas. So why should we be left with the responsibility of reselling these tickets? So that's the first thing I'd say. And I think a lot of the time people misunderstand the rights that they have as consumers. So, for instance, if you buy something online and you don't like it, you can exchange it within up to 14 days after receiving the product, except in the case of tickets for events like theatre shows or airline tickets.
Okay.
And the reason for that is, let's say this company, they're having a big theatrical performance, I don't know what it is, and they announce it in the first 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, they might sell the largest number of tickets, because that's when there's the highest level of interest in this new thing that's just been announced.
There's also been radio ads, interviews, paper ads, all that sort of
thing. And if they had to work then under the assumption that a lot of people would kind of change their mind and say, well, listen, you've got loads of time to resell those tickets. So that's the first thing, that you don't have the right to the refund, nor I think should you be expecting or assuming that you'll get a refund, in exactly the same way that if you buy tickets for a flight and you decide you can't go for some reason, you can't expect the airline to give you your money back, even though they would definitely be able to sell those tickets, those seats on into the future. So what I would suggest to this person is, they have four spare tickets for this event. The four people that they were intending to gift them to can't go. So they could either find four other people and turn it into a positive by giving those four other people the tickets to the event so they don't go to waste. Or they could use one of the many different platforms that are out there, such as Dundeal and Adverts and eBay, to sell the tickets on, to minimise the financial impact on themselves. But it is very important that they take the responsibility for this upon themselves, because it's not the fault of a small theatrical company.
There is no way, just because this is important information for people, that if you buy tickets for a theatre event, that they will refund you if something changes.
No, there's none. Unless they're really, really, they're feeling really good about the world. But there's no legal obligation, and there's no, I don't think there should be an expectation that that'll happen, because that's just the way the world works. You bought the tickets in good faith. They sold them to you in good faith. Turns out that some of the people you bought them for can't go. What are you going to do? You know, the person who is going to take the financial hit shouldn't necessarily be the theatrical company selling the tickets. It should be, unfortunately, our listener. And it's not often that we say that, but it is. I think sometimes it's important to highlight the rights you don't have as much as it is to highlight the rights that you do have, just to save themselves the heartache of getting onto the company and shouting the place down, saying, I want my money back.
And so many more of our listeners are learning by this person's mistake.
Well, that's exactly it. So just be careful, like, check the dates. And it's unfortunate, and don't get me wrong, but if I was there...
But if you're gifting somebody, you're not going to go, are you available this, you know, just check it.
No, 100%. Unfortunate. But if I was them, I would gift them to somebody else and to turn a negative into a positive.
Conor Pope, thank you very much. Pricewatch at rte.ie. If you want Conor to grapple with any of your consumer issues, that's it from us for today. Cormac is on Drive Time on his own. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.